Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a bit snarky about all things books. If you like the show, I'd really love your support. Spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, or get bonus podcast episodes by supporting the podcast on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the first mini episode of 2020 for Sarah's Bookshelves Live. Mini episodes feature book bloggers, Instagrammers, and regular readers that apply to be on the show and focus solely on book recommendations. And did y'all catch that I did not say in 20 minutes or less? That was intentional because after the extra long mini episode with Elizabeth Chapman, which aired in November, and that was episode 37, if you're interested, I heard from a number of you that you liked that I did not stick strictly to the 20-minute time limit. So I decided to just scrap that time limit. These mini episodes will still be much shorter than the full-length versions, and they will just feature the book recommendation portion of the show like they always have, but I'm not going to hold myself strictly to 20 minutes or less moving forward. So thank you so much for your feedback, and I hope you enjoy the possibly sometimes slightly longer mini episodes. Today's guest is Brittany Block, and she is otherwise known as BRB Reads on Instagram. Brittany was a language arts and math special education inclusion teacher for 2 years before enlisting in the Air Force. She can't reveal much about her current job other than the fact that she's currently stationed in Germany, which makes me so curious about your job. All I want to do is ask you questions about your job, but we will stay away from that. And she's always been an avid reader and consistently reads over 100 books a year. And when she was a teacher, she enjoyed trying to find books that would get her students, especially the ones with reading disabilities, excited about reading. Brittany is a patron of Sarah's Bookshelves Live, and she got bumped to the top of the waiting list to come on the show as part of the bonus goodies she gets as a patron. And she is also our first guest who does not currently live in the United States. Welcome, Brittany.
Hey, Sarah.
Thanks so much for being here virtually all the way across the Atlantic Ocean. And because you live in Germany right now, we're going to start out a little bit differently today because I have some things that I am super curious to hear from you. The last time I really did a lot of reading abroad was back in 2000. So e-readers weren't really a thing yet. At least I didn't have one. And I also brought all of my books from home. So I want to know some things about how you read while living abroad. So are you able to get new books at the same time as they're released in the US? And if so, how do you do that?
Yes, we actually have a library on base that has an excellent selection. And you can also put holds on books and get them sent to the location you're at, which is awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I frequently use Overdrive because it's through the base library. So that's why majority of my reading is done by audiobooks. Because the Overdrive selection is fantastic, so I actually don't go into the base library very often. What I have found is that I really miss the branch libraries. So going into the branch libraries and actually talking to different librarians in the neighborhood, that's not really a thing.
Does your base library have a librarian?
They do. It's not convenient to where we live, so I don't go there as often. I was spoiled by the branch library. It was about 5 minutes from our old house, so I popped in there 2 or 3 times a week.
And you mean your old house in the U.S., right?
Yeah, in Georgia.
Gotcha. Oh, well, I am so glad to hear that our troops have libraries. That's good to know. Also, probably not indicative of a regular expat living abroad, how they would be able to get books. You have sort of a special system.
Yeah, probably not. I naively thought that I could go into a ton of bookstores here. That's not the case, especially in the local area, because they're all in German.
Yeah, makes sense.
But again, the base library is fantastic.
And you said you listen to audiobooks through Overdrive. Do you use an e-reader at all?
I do. And I can still get, the selection is fantastic. I can actually use Amazon.com and Amazon.de while here, which is nice.
Oh, so you can still get US versions of ebooks through Amazon.com even though you're over there.
Yes, which I did not realize, but it's also amazing.
That's good to know.
I was really hoping to be able to pop in and out of bookstores and be able to read the books, but it's more just me popping in and out of bookstores.
Looking at the pretty covers.
Seeing covers that I recognize by authors that I recognize, but it's all in German, so I can't read them.
Do you recognize the covers when you go into a bookstore over there? Because I thought international covers are often pretty different than the US versions.
Sometimes they're similar enough that I can recognize them. And I've tried to share a few on Instagram. When I see ones that are similar, I'm like, hey, I know this book. I don't know any German besides the pleasantries, asking for the bill in restaurants and hello and goodbye. I will say it was extremely nerve-wracking at first. I think myself and others coming here probably assume that more people speak English. That's not the case, especially where we live. So we had to kind of fumble our way through.
All right. So tell me a little bit about your reading taste.
So my reading has always, even before teaching eighth grade, has always been varied. I like reading middle grade. I like reading science fiction. Not a ton of it, but I like challenging myself with genres that I don't tend to prefer.
So those are not your preferred genres. They are the genres you challenge yourself with in addition to what you normally like.
Yes. I do like darker reads. I like post-apocalyptic. I like books that make me uncomfortable or make me think afterwards.
Yeah, I noticed that you liked dark, bleak reads after
yes.
Seeing what your recommendations are going to be. And y'all will see that in just a minute.
Yes. If a book is described as sweet or formulaic, I kind of like run the opposite direction. So I like to take things from my reading, whether that's a new perspective or something that challenges my own personal thinking.
And do you have a preference for, say, slower character-driven books versus faster plot-driven books, or do you not really care about that?
I will say, before 2019, I would have said that I did not care for character-driven novels. However, with the chaos of moving overseas, which, although the military helps a ton, it was still very stressful. I have been leaning towards character-driven books where they're quiet. Not a ton happens. There's not a ton of action, but it's a beautiful story, which you'll see in some of my picks.
Absolutely. One in particular that I'm thinking of that I felt the same way about, and I feel like is one of those character-driven books, but that really immerses you in it. You don't feel like it's slow and boring, even though not a ton is happening.
I think that's also maturing as a reader.
Yes.
If I look at my Goodreads from 2009 and I look at the choices, now granted, I was about to get into student teaching, so I was reading where my students were and really where my maturity level was. And from there until now as a reader, like I've grown exponentially, which I'm thankful for. I mean, that's what you hope for as a reader.
Totally. So do you remember, for example, what your favorite book of 2009 was? And then compare it to kind of what it's going to be now?
Yes. I want to say Divergent.
Oh, yes.
Would have been up there, which is funny because it's still the darkness is still there.
Uh-huh.
Although the books, I've grown past the Divergent series, although it's still a solid series. I've grown past that as a reader.
So what was your favorite book of 2019?
Dearly Beloved. It's not one of my picks, but I did not want that book to end.
I agree. I loved that book.
I have never read a book that covers so many different themes and really touchy themes. Like anytime you bring faith in, it's a touchy subject.
Totally. That's why I loved that book so much, because I was nervous going into it with all the religion, because I'm not super religious. I mean, I believe, but I'm not like a regular churchgoer by any means. I thought, with the views on faith, there was something for everybody in that book. I mean, your perspective, however it is, probably was covered somewhere in that book at some point in time by one of those characters.
I completely agree. And I'm the same when it comes to church. So I do tend to get a little bit nervous. I don't like when agendas are kind of shoved down your throat with books. That's not what this book was.
Totally. I absolutely agree.
And also with motherhood, even getting to motherhood, the anticipation of one and the lack of thought of getting to motherhood of another, there were so many things covered in that book that were just so well done.
Yeah, I agree. Same thing with the views on motherhood. She really juxtaposed opposing viewpoints in a way that felt really, it felt organic to the story. It didn't feel like, hey, in this book, my goal is to present these two opposing viewpoints on motherhood.
Exactly.
That, if you missed it, my best books of 2019 list, The Dearly Beloved is on it. So I recommend it if you have not read it yet. All right, let's get into your book recommendations. As usual, Brittany is going to share two old books she loves, two new books she loves, one book she did not love, and one new release that she is excited about. Tell me about the first old book you love.
The first book is The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Yes. This is one of those bleak ones.
Yes. Bleak is definitely a good word for this book. The premise, if you haven't read it, isn't going to sound that interesting, but it's one that is still worth picking up because you're going to get something from it. It's about an unnamed father and son making their way through what's, I think it's believed to be the United States. I don't know that it necessarily states that. The writing is sparse, which matches the setting, which I've never really seen before in a book. And every time I think of this book, the relationship between the father and the son is one that I will never be able to forget. There isn't a ton of hope, which I think is why this book is hard for some people to read. But the love, again, between the father and the son is what makes this book worth reading.
So I have not read this yet. I know that's terrible. And actually, I have never really wanted to read it until I started looking at it for this episode. When I was looking at the Goodreads reviews, everybody was saying all this stuff about how bleak and depressing it is, but I love those kind of books.
I did write a few caveats.
Uh-huh.
If you're one that needs a ton of action, this is not the book for you.
Totally.
If you're going through a hard time, this is not the book for you. So make sure that you are going in with the understanding that this book is dark, a little depressing, but that this relationship, again, you'll notice a theme in a lot of my books that there's strong relationships or friendships. And this is one that I always think of whenever I think of strong relationships. I think of the father and son in The Road.
I also didn't realize how short it is. It's under 300 pages. I don't know why I imagined it being really long.
And it's not. And the way it's written, it doesn't feel like there are many words, so it doesn't take you long to get through. I did think of the slow and steady challenge that currently reading does often. Uh-huh. This would be a good book to take in small chunks, because if you're like, hey, I don't want to handle this dark, depressing book all at once, it would be good to pick up and then maybe switch back to a lighter read.
Fair. And I know that they've said, I think they've said this on air. If not, they've said it to me behind the scenes, that a lot of people are reading The Only Plane in the Sky like that for Slow But Steady because it's so emotionally tough.
Yes, which is also on my list, but I have not read that one yet.
So good. And back to The Road. The Road also won the Pulitzer, which I did not realize. And I have a thing about Pulitzer Prize winners. They tend to not work for me. But I do want to give this a shot because I love sparse writing. I love dark and bleak and depressing. I don't know what all this says about me.
Same. I was looking at my picks and I'm like, wow, okay. I will say the Pulitzer Prize thing usually makes me run in the opposite direction as well.
Oh, okay, good.
But I would not base it on this. Aside from the prize, it's a fantastic read.
This could be an anomaly for the Pulitzers.
Yes. And I read it back in 2016 and I still like vividly remember details. So this has been a while and I won't be able to forget it.
All right. That was The Road by Cormac McCarthy, and that came out in September 2006, and you're kind of making me want to read it.
Yeah, you'll fly through it.
All right, tell me about the second old book you love.
The second book that I picked was The Ensemble by Asia Gable. It's about the lives of four friends who are members of a string quartet. Please don't let the music aspect scare you. I know absolutely nothing about music. The book itself is written in four parts. It really shows, again, with the friendship theme, the complexities of friendship, of music, love, and life in general. I really liked how the four parts of the book were only about 4 to 5 years apart, because I think it really showed how day by day, it doesn't seem like things change. But when you look back 1, 3, or 5 years later, a ton has changed.
I loved this one, too. This was 5 stars for me. And I totally agree with what you said about the premise of the book. If you just kind of read what it's about and know nothing else about it, it sounds really boring and like something I wouldn't want to pick up. But that's not the case at all. I was also not at all into classical music, and that does not matter. You can totally love this book without it.
Exactly.
And I loved the like simmering powder keg type dynamics that went on between these four friends. Beyond friends, it's like they have this relationship in their lives that should come second to their spouse and their kids, but it doesn't. It actually ends up superseding it a lot. And the dynamics of this group are so interesting. I feel like they love each other so much, but I also feel like given the right circumstances, one of them could kill another one of them in the middle of the night. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Exactly. Which is dark, but I completely agree.
But that's what makes the book so good. I mean, that's what gives it its like propulsive quality, even though it's character driven.
Exactly. This is what started my year of character driven novels.
Oh, love it.
Which is amazing. I didn't know that that's what I needed. But as the busyness of the year and the move came, I just kept getting drawn to character driven novels. And this was the start of it. Which is really cool because this is a great first one to start with.
This was your gateway drug.
It was. And again, I'm with you. I wish that people wouldn't read the blurb on this one and would just pick it up because you would not be sold by the blurb.
No, not at all. And I wasn't. The only reason I read it was because Annie Jones from the Front Porch podcast, who is one of my best recommendation sources, she rated it 5 stars. Otherwise, I wouldn't have given this a second look.
I believe that's also why I picked it up. Something else that I thought was really cool with this book, this is not my idea. Renee at Little Reader on the Prairie mentioned this. She actually listened to the music that was suggested at the beginning of each part. I don't normally do that because I can find music really distracting, but I actually turned on Beethoven, Mozart, all the actual songs that she suggested at each part. And I listened to that while I was reading, and that made it the coolest reading experience.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't do that either.
I would not recommend that with really any other book.
All right. So that was The Ensemble by Asia Gable, and that came out in May of 2018. All right. Tell me about the first new book you love.
The first new book that I love is Wanderers by Chuck Wendig. The premise of this one I don't want to give too much away on because it is pretty unique. But the book starts out with Shayna, as she's one of the main characters. She realizes her sister is in a deep sleep and she's sleepwalking. That's not all that weird by itself till she realizes that her sister can't be woken up and that she's determinedly walking in one direction. Then she realizes that more and more sleepwalkers, eventually called the Flock, are heading in the same direction.
But it's post-apocalyptic, right?
Yes, post-apocalyptic. The Flock is eventually followed by friends and loved ones of the sleepwalkers. They're called the Shepherds, to make sure that nothing gets in their way or hurts them. I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but I add in a violent militia, a rock star, a radio host, and a scientist who's been disgraced.
Which all sounds like none of it makes sense together.
You're right. It doesn't. I don't want to deter anyone from listening to it on audio because that's how I read it.
Okay.
This book is 32 hours on audio.
I was going to say it's really long, isn't it?
I normally listen to books that are like 10 to 15 hours. So when I turned it on and I'm like 32, it sucks you in right away. I did not feel like it was a 32 hour book. And that to me is impressive because I didn't get bogged down in any of the details.
And for readers, 32 hours, it's about 800 pages or so. And that's what I heard when I looked at the Goodreads reviews for this one. That was the overwhelming theme, is don't let the length scare you. It's really fast moving. You'll be engrossed. And you listen to Currently Reading, right?
Yes.
Didn't Meredith on Currently Reading really like this one? And she generally does not read long books these days.
She did love this one.
Okay.
And there are a lot of characters, which sometimes it's a turnoff for me, but they're introduced in a way that isn't overwhelming.
Yeah, I can have trouble with that too, but that's good to know.
Yes. You end up caring for majority, if not all, of the characters, so you want to see how the storyline ties together. There were definite plugs to current events, but they didn't feel forced down your throat. And I think they were handled with care, which I appreciate.
Sure. And have you ever heard of or read The Dreamers by Karen Thompson Walker?
I haven't, but it's on my list.
So the premise of this one sounds really similar to The Dreamers, minus the like all walking in the same direction. And the fact that this is set in a post-apocalyptic world and The Dreamers is set in regular, just present day. But other than that, it sounds kind of similar with the premise.
I'll have to read that one. I do want to say there's a trigger warning for some graphic sexual parts. One in particular that I really could have done without, but it didn't change the fact it was a 4.5-star book for me.
All right. So that was Wanderers by Chuck Wendig, not to be confused with The Wanderers by Meg Howry, which I read a long time ago. And that came out in July of 2019. All right. Tell me about the second new book you love.
The second new book I love is My Life as a Rat by Joyce Carol Oates. The premise of this one is a 12-year-old girl named Violet. She gives a testimony of a murder of an African-American boy, and that murder is done by her older brothers, and she witnesses it. This book is basically looking back on her life and how that decision at such a young age had spiraling effects. I made the mistake of thinking that this was a light book by the title. It is not. It's not a light book at all. I had a lump in my throat for a majority of this book.
Wow.
So if those types of books aren't for you, then steer clear. The themes in this book I resonated with. So meaning of family, loyalty, friendship, loneliness, and what that looks like, and race.
Yeah, when I was researching this book, I've obviously heard of Joyce Carol Oates. She's pretty famous. I've never read any of her books, so I had no kind of preconceived notions about what type of thing she writes. But again, the overwhelming theme of the Goodreads reviews is, oh my gosh, this is so dark and bleak. And if you can't take that, don't read this. If you can, you know, it's great. But same thing as The Road.
Yes. I'm in a book group on Facebook called All Who Love Books, and they do group reads every once in a while. I hardly ever get to do the group reads just because of my schedule, but this one actually worked out. So again, I went into it with thinking it was a light read, and it's a great read. And I can't wait to read more by her if this is any indication of how she writes, because I didn't want to stop turning the pages.
And interestingly, I mean, this came out in June of 2019, and she's so famous. I feel like I never even heard of this book when it came out. It wasn't on my radar. I feel like I didn't see it much around Instagram, which is kind of interesting to me. I wonder why that is.
I'm not sure either. I only own one other book by her, and it's We Were the Mulvaneys.
Yes, that's her famous one.
Okay. I don't think she gets talked about very often. And based on My Life as a Rat, which is the only one I've read, they should be. I wish that this book was talked about more. There was a lot to talk about. And I'm glad I did it as a group read, because it was one of those that I was like, wait a minute, I need to talk about this with somebody.
Totally. So that was My Life as a Rat by Joyce Carol Oates. Came out in June 2019. And tell me about the book you did not love.
The book that I did not love was When Elephants Dance by Tess Uriza Holta. So I picked this book for my book club mostly because it was a different perspective of World War II than we had ever read before. There are several World War II themes that get overdone in book clubs, and I'm constantly looking for perspectives that are not as well known. This book is unique because it's at a time in World War II where the Japanese and U.S. forces were battling to possess the Philippines. I don't know much about the Philippines. That's honestly why I picked it. And I like to give book club picks that open our eyes to a culture we don't know, or a time in history that we aren't as familiar with.
I love that you do that, especially with World War II, because there are just so many World War II books out there that you're right, focusing on like the European theater rather than the Pacific theater or other aspects of it.
Exactly. I was really hoping that it would work. When I first started the book, I couldn't get into it because I had too many books going. That happens from time to time.
Yep.
I'll have 3 or 4 books going and I'm not giving as much attention as one needs. I ended up pushing all the other books aside because I needed to finish before book club met, and I paid only attention to this book. It was terribly written.
Oh no. Oh God.
It was a struggle to get through. So it seemed like she was trying to add magical realism into it, but it shouldn't have been there. So she would have parts where the characters were imagining things And I couldn't tell if they were actually thinking that they happened or if they were made up. It was extremely hard to follow.
Right.
I don't think many in my book club, if they finished it, they didn't enjoy it. And most didn't finish it. And then when I started reading through the reviews, because I don't like to just completely disregard a book. I want to understand what didn't work for me. And that way I can explain to my book club, like, hey, this might be why it didn't work for you also.
Right.
It turns out there are a lot of like geographic inaccuracies.
Oh, really?
Which me not being familiar with the Philippines, I did not know that.
Yeah.
But those who were, you can read in the reviews that there were a lot.
And it's crazy too, because I hadn't heard of this book, but when I researched it, I did find that it seemed to have been a bestseller and pretty critically acclaimed at the time when it was published, which was in 2002. Which, that's crazy if it was getting critical acclaim with a bunch of geographic inaccuracies in it.
Exactly.
That was When the Elephants Dance by Tess Uritza Holta. So we're going to talk about your new release you're excited about next, but let me preface it quickly. Y'all have heard me talk about this book on last week's episode, which was the Winter 2020 book preview. This episode was recorded before that. So I'm just going to give you that background before we talk about this book. So tell us what your upcoming release you're excited about is.
The new release I'm excited for is The Long Bright River by Liz Moore.
And it's already out, y'all. It came out like a week ago.
The book is set in Philadelphia, where an opioid crisis has hit the city. It's about two sisters who are living completely parallel lives. One as an addict who lives on the streets, and the other as a police officer who works the same streets that her sister lives on. I come from the northeast corner of Ohio, where we have also had an opioid crisis.
Yes.
So anytime I see that in a book, I'm immediately drawn to it, mostly because I've had friends and family that are impacted, and I always want to understand, which is one of the major reasons why I read things that are difficult. It's that I want to understand why.
Yep.
This book, with the alternating point of view, I think will work well with present day and the two sisters' childhood and how they were brought up.
And have you read this book yet? You have not, right?
I haven't.
Okay, cool.
Again, I always have those questions for those who are struggling with addiction and understanding how they got to that point where they can't see that there are better decisions out there, that that is the only answer that they can see in front of them.
Yep. And I have read this book, and I will say that I thought Liz Moore handled, particularly the sister with the opioid addiction, she certainly wasn't easy on her, but did handle her with a level of empathy as to, you know, how she got to the place where she got to. I think you'll be happy with that.
Okay, good.
And y'all, this was also a book of the month pick for December, so many readers might already have this in their hands. And I can co-sign this. I've already read it. I loved it. 4.5 stars for me. And I will warn everyone, I'm not sure if you saw this or not. Did you see that the publisher has been marketing this as The Next Girl on the Train, and it was also blurbed by Paula Hawkins, who wrote Girl on the Train?
No.
It's not like that. It's not like that at all. That's my warning.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Do not go into this expecting The Girl on the Train. This book is nothing like that.
I wish that they would stop doing that.
I know.
I was just talking about that with someone else. I was talking about The Care and Feeding of Ravenously Hungry Girls. They compared this book to The Mothers and American Marriage.
Oh, I remember that. Yep, it wasn't.
I went in with that expectation. American Marriage is my most recommended audiobook, my favorite audiobook. And The Mothers is just, it stands alone because it's fantastic.
Yep.
So when I went in with those two books in mind, this book just did a like serious nosedive.
I felt the same way. I wouldn't say it did a nosedive for me, but I definitely was underwhelmed based on what I thought it was going to be. Because I also loved The Mothers and American Marriage. Those were both 5 stars for me.
Yes. I hate that that happens, because had I gone in with no expectation, I would have maybe enjoyed the book. Maybe not, but I could have.
Yeah, no, I agree. Back to Long Bright River. I would say It is a literary police procedural that has a family drama element in it as well. So
perfect.
I'm thinking kind of Miracle Creek might be a good comparison. That's more of a courtroom drama, but there's some police procedural stuff in there too. But the fact that it is sort of an elevated literary take on that and has the family drama element as well.
That one's also on my list.
Oh, I think you'll love that one. So that was Long Bright River by Liz Moore. It's already out. It came out last week. And those of you that are Book of the Month members might have had it in your hands for a month before that. And I wholeheartedly co-sign this one as well. And Liz Moore is going to be a guest on an upcoming episode of the podcast. So get excited for that. Brittany, thank you so much for calling in all the way from Germany. All right. So tell everybody where they can find you online before we go.
You can find me on Instagram at @brbreads.
Awesome. So everybody go follow Brittany. And y'all, if you'd like to get bonus episodes of the podcast, including each full-length episode guest sharing their superlative picks, and the newest feature, which is a monthly bonus episode that's just me doing the book recommendation portion of my show, you can subscribe for $5 a month on Patreon, and there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio. Next week will be a full-length episode featuring Jordan, also known on Instagram as Jordy's Book Club. And he will be talking about Bookstagram, how he grew his account so quickly, his photography, which is gorgeous, and his advice for other Bookstagrammers. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at www.sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. You can find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get exclusive bonus episodes of the podcast, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/sarahsbookshelves. And there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Thanks for listening.